From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 22nd day of July 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities. We'll check out the weather forecast with John Davis. He's with Risk Pulse, and we'll check in on the plant pathology and entomology field day that took place this morning right here on this campus. And you can hear it all at Illinois Public Media online at willag.com. And right now on public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, September corn today down 8.5 cents at $4.22¾. December at $4.26¾, 9 lower. March down 8.25 at $4.35¾. And the May down 7.75 at $4.40¼. July futures $4.43¾, 7.5 lower. Next year's December down 1¼ at $4.17¼, all in the corn. Soybean futures 13¼ lower at $8.88¼. November at $9.05¾, down 13.5. January down 13.25, $9.18¼ the settlement price. July down 11 at $9.45½. The bean oil 37 cents lower. Bean meal down $2.80. Wheat futures soft red September at $4.87¼, 15¼ lower. Hard red down 10¾ at $4.29¼. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the August 85 cents higher at $108.45. October at $109.15, up 65. August feeder cattle 220 higher at $142.17½, and September there at $142.42½, up $2.62½. Lean hogs August contract down 65 cents at $83.22½. October on out were higher. That October contract at $79.20, up 27.5 cents. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, is here to help us make sense of what happened in Chicago for the day. Hey, Kurt, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, you're welcome, Ty. Glad to be here. Thank you.
That was a rough day again in Chicago. We had four of those last week, and I'm not sure that everybody thought that there would be such follow-up today, but by golly, soybeans were down 13 in the lead, and November were 13 lower. Corn futures in the December down 9 cents. Tough day in Chicago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seems like Mr. Gravity took over in through here. It's just kind of dismal, lackluster on the bullish side of the equation. A lot of the traders are, looking at the weather maps there going in the weekend, extreme heat and some dryness around, and whenever you get the drought bull trying to raise his horns in there, you have to keep the green and the yellow and the red off the radar, because if you're watching the radar there and see those showers and storms move across the Midwest, it kind of takes away the enthusiasm. It seems like Illinois is kind of an island in through here, kind of went around to the north and stayed to the west of us, but we'll see how the forecast unfolds as we move forward. Cooler but dry. We don't have really a decent shot at some moisture until first part of next week, so whether that becomes an issue or not, we'll see. This afternoon's conditions expected to be unchanged from last week as a nation. 58% good to excellent on corn and 54% good to excellent on beans is where we were last week. Main thing is kind of the breakdowns, the states and areas. I don't know if yesterday's rain event, particularly in the eastern part of it, as you look at Indiana and Ohio, it help improvement in time for that report or not. So I look for some deterioration in the east, but some improvement in the west and to the north of us in through here. Kind of a waiting game in through here. When you visit with producers that receive rain, they bring up the issue of acres. Acres aren't there. So, that's going to be a event as we move forward in through here. A little concern as we move into the August crop report. Even though the crops, good to excellent category is going to be watched, we've got to watch silking, tousling, and potting as we move into the crop report. Trey's starting to get an idea that it could be an extreme move up and down both from the standpoint they'll have to probably rely on counting stocks. There won't be a whole lot of ears to count or kernels to count. There won't be a whole lot of bean pods to count. So therefore, if they count stocks and figure each one's going to have an ear, that could keep yield up. But if they get the acres adjusted, that could lower the acreage some, and so you could have another whipsaw event in the corn, even bean complex, of sharply higher, sharply lower in a matter of a microsecond. So the black boxes will be active as we approach that day. But meantime, we got to survive until then. Technically, corn's still a little bit of a concern from the chart formations. If you look at the daily corn chart, it's been well advertised. We're sort of carving out a head and shoulders top end through here. So it's going to be important for this 420 level to kind of hold the support area. If you're a cycle person, we've been sort of carving out some little bit of lows in here every 3 to 4 weeks. And probably more important is we're due for a 10-week cycle low here in the corn here this week. So we need some type of good old-fashioned reversal off this 420 level. Momentum indicators are getting a little oversold. RSI is not quite the oversold status yet, but we're kind of geared up in here. So if we can hold 420, maybe we can buy a little time until we get into the crop tours and crop reports here in August and September.
Who are the primary players on the sheet today, and does the momentum indicators being oversold tell you anything about what those positions will look like in the future?
Well, the funds have been the sellers here short term. The short term trend is down, and they're kind of, and we're staying below the moving averages for the most part. And it's just a lack of buyers. Overall volume wasn't real that heavy of what we've been accustomed to here on Monday. So I think it's just a lack of buying interest. We just saw some liquidation in through here. We'll have to see what open interest total show in the morning, see if this was new selling or not. But it seems like the public's gone to the sideline. The producer has gone to the sideline. It's the funds kind of preaching it back and forth. The moral of the story, the whole thing, take something home today, whether you're bullish or bearish, you got to have some staying power, because this thing's going to be up and down, and you don't want to get spooked out on extreme moves. And I think that's what we're going to start seeing again here as we move into the month of August.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Well, earlier today on the University of Illinois South Farms, Nick Sider, entomologist, along with the plant pathologist here, held a field day and took some folks out to take a look at some things. What was it you showed them today?
Yeah, so we're going through our research plots today where we're evaluating different control technologies for corn rootworm control. Also talked a little bit about our work on scouting for insects in soybeans and some of the different insect pests that farmers should be on the lookout for this time of year.
Western corn rootworm has been one of those problem insects, the number one insect for amount of money spent to control. Usually these days that's just on a genetic modification of the corn, but there are some problems that have been cropped up over the last decade or so, as the insect tends to manage to get around whatever happens to be used to control it.
Yeah, that's correct. And my colleague, Dr. Joe Spencer, was here as well talking about the development of resistance to BT traits and where we're at in that process, what trait packages are still performing well and which ones are starting to lose some of their control abilities.
Tell me about the other things that you'll be showing off today.
Sure. We'll be looking at work evaluating different soil insecticides and different seed treatments for corn rootworm control. And we'll be talking a little bit about how to better estimate defoliation in soybean and how big of a problem that can be or how small of a problem that can be in most cases. We talk a little bit about the soybean gall midge, which is an invasive soybean pest that we do not have in Illinois yet, but that they're dealing with and having some struggles with in Iowa and Nebraska.
Are your expectations that the westerlies will bring that into northern Illinois first?
I hope not, but we'll see. We would expect them to come into that part of the state first if they do arrive here.
What does this insect look like and what kind of damage does it do?
The stage that you would be most likely to see would be the larvae, the maggots, which are very small, bright orange maggots that live inside of the soybean stem, just behind the skin or the epidermis of the plant. The symptoms that you'll observe on the plant, unfortunately, are dead plants, particularly along the edge. There may be some swelling of the stem, some necrotic areas of the stem, and when you peel back that epidermis, you'll find many of the larvae.
At this point in the season, because the crop is so late, both corn and soybeans, about 50% of it planted later than usual, by roughly a month for corn, 3 weeks for soybeans, what should producers be scouting for?
Right now, we're starting to get into the reproductive stages in soybean in many cases. Good time to start scouting for defoliating pests. Good time to start scouting for stink bugs. That'll ramp up a little bit more as we get into the pod formation stages. And a lot of the corn, we're getting into tasseling. If you're in a part of the state where you've had issues with western bean cutworm, it would be a good time to start scouting for that pest. Beyond that, we're hopefully starting to outrun many of our pests. It's also a good time to evaluate your control technologies for corn rootworm to see how well you performed. There's nothing really you can do about it at this point, but this is the time to go out and evaluate how well your control strategy is working and whether you need to change anything for next year.
Thanks so much, Nick.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Nick Sider is an extension entomologist at the University of Illinois. Nathan Klucheski is the plant pathologist. He's also here hosting this Plant Pathology and Entomology Day on campus. Thanks for being with us. I want to ask you about fungicide applications. We are late, as we just talked with Nick, about putting this crop in, and producers are wondering whether it's really worth trying to do, especially for corn. And some, I think, are hearing that a corn application might be beneficial, especially in a late season crop, meaning it was put in the ground. What are your thoughts on this process?
Well, the benefit of a fungicide is really going to be, it's going to come down to how much disease potential you have in your field. So the first thing you have to do is you have to be out in your field looking at what kind of diseases you have out there. So if you're out in the western part of the state right now where there's heavy gray leaf spot pressure and you haven't quite reached tassel, and, you know, we have fields out there where gray leaf spot's already above the ear leaf in many cases. In those situations, you might consider a fungicide. If your corn is healthy and green, it might not be something that you have to worry about. The biggest thing you have to think about with these late planted fields and you have to consider is your yield potential, right? We're planting later, so the yield potential is probably less. And then that therefore means that the amount of money that the producers have to pay for an application is less. And then also you have to think about the potential benefit. Okay, so you really have to run the numbers, figure out what kind of protection of yield am I going to have from applying these fungicides, and is that going to end up paying for itself given my potential yield and also given what you would anticipate as the commodity prices. And so when we have these low price years, lower yields, it might not work out in every case. And then the other thing people have to think about too, later planted fields, maybe you weren't able to switch your hybrid to a shorter day hybrid. You spray that fungicide on, let's say you control those diseases longer, it's going to stay greener longer. And now you have to start considering things like frost and harvestability and all those other factors. So it's pretty complicated. But the best thing you can do is run the numbers and go out in your field and kind of check and see where you're at.
And do you have a set of numbers that they can compare them to so they can go to maybe the Bulletin website and read an article, they can find something online?
Yes, if you go to the Bulletin, I recently wrote an article on fungicide applications in corn. I discuss a little bit about southern rust, tar spot, and gray leaf spot, and also some of the challenges that we'll have with making fungicide applications this year.
Turning your attention to soybean, in recent years, more fungicide has been used on soybeans. This came up from South America first, was used in the southern part of the United States, and has made its way all the way through Illinois, I think parts of the northern Corn Belt now, too. And they have gotten a fairly good bump on yield, and sometimes that's what they use it for. But that comes, I think, when they're controlling pathogens in the field. Mm-hmm. What conditions should they use it and not use it under this year?
Really, what we're dealing with in soybeans right now, foliar fungicides probably aren't going to be a major benefit for most people in the central to maybe northern part of the state, at least from what we're seeing. In the southern part of the state where we're having more storms running through, the crops a little further along, you have a history of, say, frog eye leaf spot or things like that. That's where you're going to get the most benefit from a foliar application. As you move further north, north of I-80, white molds are a big concern. When you look at the weather we've had, it's been dry. You look at our Sporecaster model that Damon Smith built, it's saying that we have basically 0% chance of white mold at the moment. So the risk for white mold is pretty low. So, I'd say it's not something that needs to be applied just willy-nilly. I think it's similar to corn. Some of the same questions and concerns that growers have about spraying late on soybeans, it's going to apply with corn as well. So, how can you harvest the plant if it's maintaining its greenness three or four weeks later than normal? That's something you got to think about.
Hey, thanks, Nathan.
No problem.
Nathan Klucheski is an extension plant pathologist based here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We were joined by he and Nick Sider, who's the extension entomologist. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention on this Monday afternoon to the weather forecast. John Davis is here from Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, John. So good to hear from you today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I want to start not in the United States, but in Europe, because I believe, and you can tell me more about this, that they're just about to go back into the big heat.
Yeah, they had historic heat about a month ago, and they're in for another round, with some areas getting temperatures up 103, 106, possibly 110 in some areas. And these are crop areas of Europe. So the ridge of high pressure that's going to build up across that area will tend to be centered over France. But many areas across Central and Western Europe will be involved in the heat and the dryness, and it looks like this period has longevity. So they're extremely hot over the next 4 or 5 days, have a minor respite kind of over the weekend, and then next week get back into extreme heat. So they are really having problems in Europe, and it's the second bout of big time record heat across much of the crop areas in Central and Western Europe.
Now, on that note, we had a lot of heat, and I'm not certain that it was as bad as forecast over the weekend. Can you tell me what that looked like for the United States?
Yeah, well, for the United States and for the central U.S., it was a 3 to 5 day period of heat. So the areas that had 3 days, more kind of northern and eastern areas of the Midwest, the 5 days were more like southwest areas like Kansas and Missouri and southern Nebraska. But it was about a 3 to 5 day of heat that, of course, broke big time here yesterday as we got cooler, less humid air coming in from the north. So, it wasn't a week in duration, it wasn't 10 days, but it was 3 to 5 days of pretty extensive heat, more so on the minimums than on the maximums.
Farmers at this point, I think, would like to have a little rainfall, though there seemed to be a set of storms that moved across the northern part of the growing regions in the central United States.
That's right. So over the weekend, we saw very good rainfall across the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and then some other areas got some pretty good rains. The pattern now that cooler, drier air has moved in, that's also kind of reduced the humidity, and that reduces the rainfall prospects this week. So this week in general looks pretty dry across the Midwest. As we begin to see some warmth come back into the belt here over the weekend and next week, we will introduce some increase in shower activity, but overall the pattern for the majority of the Midwest here coming up does feature drier than normal conditions over about a half to two-thirds of the acreage.
And if you get into the first week of August, what does it look like?
Well, once we start warming up, which happens this weekend and next week, the final 5 or 6 days of July and continuing into early August does look warmer than normal. It doesn't look as hot as what happened late last week, but it's a situation where temperatures will be consistently above normal, but over a longer period of time. So more duration and a little bit less magnitude than what we had last week. The bottom line is that we will have at least about a 10-day period of pretty consistently above normal temperatures across the belt starting the weekend and next week, and that continues into early August.
As we wrap up, let's country hop just a little bit. What are conditions like in China?
Well, in China, we do have some issues there. In central China, those issues involve heat and dryness across some areas, not across large expanses, but in some pretty key corn acreage in central China, they are having some difficulty there.
And finally, in India.
Yeah, the Indian monsoon continues to be quite spotty. It's never been good. It's never been abundant this season. And it looks like that trend continues with very spotty activity. In other words, not a disaster across India with the monsoon this year, but far from ideal. And that trend looks to continue right into early August.
Hey, thanks so much.
Oh, my pleasure, Todd.
And of course, is John Davis. He is with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Monday afternoon. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. We're joined by Greg Johnson of the Andersons. Greg, thanks for being with us this afternoon. I bet it's quiet there in the elevator office space.
It is very quiet. With the lower markets and lack of rainfall in our area over the weekend, either one of those might have triggered some sales, a higher market or some rain, but neither one happened. And so as a result, it was a very quiet day today.
What's cash basis been like for the last several days? Because we had a rough week last week.
Yeah, the basis actually lightened up a little bit, maybe 5 to 10 cents here in Illinois, maybe 5 cents in Indiana. Ohio did not lighten up, and then we're hearing even maybe 5 to 10 cents lower in the western Corn Belt where the crops look better and there's a little bit more old crop supply. So we've maybe hit a little plateau for now. The basis has really skyrocketed, 60 over in Ohio, 50 over in Illinois, some 30 overs in or 50 over in Indiana, 30 over in Illinois. So we've seen some, you know, extremely firm basis levels. But I think the basis has gone up enough for now in some people's minds, and now we'll wait and see. We may have to make another run up later, but. You know, for now, I think basis is kind of plateaued out.
So a combination of things that probably brought some old crop corn, I assume, out of storage and sold it into the market. And then there probably was movement from the west to the east in terms of where grain flow was headed.
Exactly. And that's what's going to have to continue to happen there. You know, the old move it from where it is to where it ain't. And it ain't in the eastern Corn Belt. It is in the western Corn Belt. So we're going to continue to see movement over Chicago, you know, from the west to the east and get it to the places where it needs to get to.
What are your bids for the day?
Old crop corn, 435. New crop corn, also 435. Old crop beans, 856. New crop beans, 866.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, Greg.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Well, that wraps up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. The opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between each and every business day of the year. And don't forget about Commodity Week, recorded on Thursday afternoons and posted to the website by about 5 o'clock that night. It's all about the programming that serves agriculture across this great nation. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.